In this double feature, we present the UFO's mission to help humanity and the UFO's responded to me.
Let me give you a couple pictures of etheric physical here. These are photographs that were taken at exactly the right time, two times. There's two different spacecraft here. And if you look very carefully, you can see through parts of the spacecraft. These are two spacecraft that were caught on by photograph just as they were transitioning from solid physical to etheric physical. They were just transitioning from solid physical to etheric physical. They're half and half.
Welcome, everyone, to another inspiring episode of Planetary Makeover. Today, we are featuring again our old friend, Mr. Dick Larson. And this time, we're listening to his discussion on the fascinating topic of UFOs, which I think everyone is intrigued by, if not downright mesmerized by. But as always, first we want to remind you that at Planetary Makeover, we're not here to convince you of anything. All we ask is that you consider what we present with a truly open mind, to consider a world and a new civilization of peace, love, sharing, justice, equality, world peace, synthesis, and love. Embracing the best of the new while retaining the best of the old. And to accomplish this feat, we assert and demonstrate that humanity is not alone, that we have help of an extraordinary kind, which will inspire us to transform these seemingly impossible futures into reality. We're referring to the world teacher and his group, the Masters of Wisdom, who are spiritual teachers, not religious figures per se. And it is true, at the same time, that these characters, this group, had been predicted by all the world's major religions, though they belong to none of them. For instance, the Jews are looking for the Messiah. The Muslims seek the Imam Mahdi. The Hindus are waiting for the Kalki avatar. The Christians await the Christ. And the Buddhists are looking for Maitreya Buddha. They got the name right. Except his name is just Maitreya. He's sort of a Buddha for this age, but not the Buddha, who is his brother and who he works with closely. But that's a whole nother episode to describe. As I mentioned, Maitreya and the Masters are spiritual teachers, in the broadest sense, here for everyone. They are not beholden to any religious, governmental, or philosophical institutions. And it's considered the most important event in mankind's history. They love everyone unconditionally, including those who don't believe in them or accept them at this point. Everyone from the most fervent fundamentalist to the agnostics and the atheists. Now, Maitreya is an avatar wielding energies and combinations that have never been seen on this planet before. And this, in part, is because he, in turn, is overshadowed by even greater avatars. The avatar of peace and equilibrium, one of synthesis, and another for which we have no name at this point to describe it. And the Masters are helping humanity and the planet enter the Age of Aquarius, which is more than just a pop song in the 60s, which, if you recall, was the dawning of the Age of Aquarius in that song, but an age of 2,150 years, and they'll be with us the entire time. Now, writings about Maitreya and the Masters, as well as their own writings, are meant to stimulate our minds and enhance our intuition. Just reading or listening to this information can be transformative, but in a way that doesn't interfere with our free will, which is sacrosanct to the Masters of Wisdom and Maitreya, thankfully. Now, we can point to some earthly people that have written about the Masters of Wisdom, starting with Madame Blavatsky with the Theosophical Society back in the late 19th century, and then Helena Roderick bringing us into the early 20th century, and then Alice Bailey at mid-century, and then more recently, our author, esotericist, and artist, Benjamin Krem, taking us from the late 20th century into the early 21st. Now, back to our guest. Dick is a counselor with a background in education who addresses issues of meditation and practical spirituality. He has been a guest on radio talk shows nationwide, co-hosted a radio program himself, and produced and hosted a series of public access television shows that have aired around the nation. Dick gives public lectures on the ageless wisdom teaching and their relationship to what is happening in the world today. His message is one of great hope for our future. Incidentally, Dick was also the original host and founding member of the Planetary Makeover team. And so without further ado, here is our friend and mentor, Dick Larson.
Thank you, David. What a great introduction. Wow. Hope I can live up to it. Yes, so today's topic is going to be UFOs and their spiritual mission. Now, David laid down some of the background behind this, but I would like to go ahead and give you just a little bit more background information so that it makes what I'm going to say about our space brothers and sisters a little more understandable and puts it in context a little bit. Like David said, we're all evolving. Everything is evolving. The planet is evolving. Our solar system is evolving. Human beings are evolving. All of the kingdoms on this planet, the mineral kingdom, the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, the human kingdom, and the spiritual kingdom are all evolving. And so we're a big part of that because we're both animal. We owe our bodies to the animal kingdom. And spirit, we owe our spirits to the spiritual kingdom. So we're both. We're where both meet in the middle, which makes us the caretaker for this planet and for the kingdoms below us, which we've not done a very good job of. But we'll get more into that in a minute. He talked about the ages. You know, this is a really important concept. And I don't want you to think that we're talking about the ages that show the astrology that shows up in newspapers and magazines, for entertainment. That's not what we're talking about. Our solar system, and consequently our planet, is surrounded by 12 huge constellations, very powerful constellations. We call those 12 constellations the zodiac. Now, what we're talking about here is actual astronomy, not some kind of fiction. Astronomy, the movement of heavenly bodies through cosmos. So here's how it works. Those 12 constellations are around our solar system. And every 2,000 years or so, our solar system and our planet, Earth, comes into alignment with one of these constellations. And when we're in alignment with a constellation, we say we're in the age of whatever that constellation is. Well, for the last 2,000 years, we have been in alignment with and in the age of the great constellation Pisces. And Pisces, when we're in alignment, we can receive these tremendous energies from the constellations. And those energies of all 12 constellations help us and our planet evolve. You know how planet Earth evolves? Because we evolve. As we evolve, so does our planet. And we need to step it up because we haven't been doing a great job of evolving, especially lately. But the two primary energies, I think you might find this interesting. The two primary energies of Pisces are individuality. Man has come out of the herd in the last 2,000 years, and dedication to an ideal. And it was dedication to the ideal of freedom that saved the world from Hitler and his cohorts in World War II. So the Piscean energy has done its job, And now in 1625, we started moving out of the influence of Pisces. And in 1675, we started moving into alignment with the next constellation that's backwards from the astrology that you read in magazines. We started moving into the next constellation, which is Aquarius. And that was in 1675. So right now, we're in the middle. We're receiving energy from both constellations. And when that happens, there's chaos on the planet. And you can see that that's actually happening right now. And I'll tell you why. Because they have such different energies. Piscean energy created the individuals, the strong individuals that we see today in the world, including you and me. And now Aquarian energy supports group action. It supports its primary energies are synthesis and cooperation, working together. So now the goal is to take the powerful individuals that were built under Pisces and have them work together cooperatively in groups, because Aquarian energy only supports group action. It doesn't support individuals. It supports groups. So the dictators and so on are on their way out. They're gone. They don't know it yet, but they are. Group action is what Aquarian energy supports. That's why people marching in the streets in the United States could save our healthcare, because they had this tremendously powerful Aquarian energy behind them when they were marching in the streets as a group. So Aquarius supports group action. And now, for the first time in almost 100,000 years, 98,000 years is our information. Now, those masters of wisdom that David talked about, they're the senior members of our spiritual kingdom. There's 63 is affiliated with Earth's evolution. And they're the senior members of our evolution. They've gone through human evolution ahead of the rest of us and become perfected individuals, perfected human beings. And so they don't need to be in a body anymore because they've learned all the lessons that planet Earth can teach. So they've graduated. They've gone to the spiritual kingdom permanently, and they're the senior members of the spiritual kingdom. And you will know some of these great masters. They, by the way, they're called masters because they're masters over themselves, not because they're masters over us. They're masters over themselves. And so some of these great masters are people that we knew as Buddha, Confucius, Jesus, Krishna, Muhammad. Joan of Arc is one of the great masters now. Mary, the mother of Jesus, is one of the great masters now. And then the disciples, of course, Peter and Paul and John and Ringo. No, not Ringo. I'm kidding. But these are all great masters now. And behind the scenes, they have been the inspiration for the advanced beings of the human race, their disciples and other advanced humanity, scientists, artists, all of the musicians, the painters, all of the great advancements of society have come as an inspiration of the masters of wisdom behind the scenes, because they're not out in space somewhere. They're here. Their consciousness is here on the planet. They're in the desert and mountain regions of the world, of the planet, where they don't have to worry about air pollution and sound pollution, noise pollution, all that stuff to distract them from their work, because they work 24 hours a day. They don't need to sleep or eat. They are working 24/7 to help administer God's plan through humanity on planet Earth. That's who they are. And this is a great time to be alive, because every 2,000 years we get a great teacher to bring the next update, the next advanced step for humanity. Jesus taught the love of God. Buddha taught the wisdom of God. Now the next teacher comes 2,000 years later, Maitreya, as mentioned by David, the world teacher. He's known as the world teacher. He comes to bring the teaching of God's will. And, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. That's an old saying. Well, humanity must be now ready to start doing God's will seriously. We must be advanced enough that we're at that point. So he comes to teach the will of God. He comes to teach us right relationship with each other, how to be in right relationship. You know, we're here to learn and grow, but we're also here to serve. And we haven't done much of a job of that, serving each other. See, it's by serving each other that we serve God. And so He comes to teach right relationship and the wisdom, the will of God, and a whole bunch of other lessons that we are now ready to learn. Now, he comes as a teacher. The masters, he doesn't come alone. By the time this age is over, there'll be more than 40 masters walking amongst us. There'll be a master in every aspect of human life. There'll be a master in government, a master in education, a master in healthcare, a master in the arts. There'll be a master in every major politics and government aspect of human life. And they'll be making suggestions. They'll never force us to do anything. David said that our free will is sacred. The masters protect it. And that's right. They would never, ever force us to do anything. So they're going to come and make suggestions, and we have free will. We can either follow them or not. By the way, Maitreya has said, through Benjamin Krem, has said that there are about 2 billion people who will respond when they first come forward. And Maitreya will be the first one to come forward to humanity openly on television and radio worldwide all at one time. That's how he's going to introduce himself. It's going to happen soon, within the next 5 years for sure. Now, I don't know that officially. That's my personal opinion. By the way, I have some notes here. So if you see me glancing down, I don't want to leave anything out. I don't want to skip over anything for you guys. So forgive me if I look at my notes once in a while. Something else that David said, I want to remind you. I'm not here to get you to believe what I'm saying. I'm not here to cram anything down your throat. I'm just here to give out my information. Most of it comes from Benjamin Krem, spelled C-R-E-M-E. He's got about 17 books on Amazon. And if you want to get a really fascinating book about the UFOs, he's got one. And I'll tell you what it's called. Now, his name is Benjamin Krem, C-R-E-M-E. Looks like cream, but it's Krem. He was from London. He passed away at age 94. He traveled the world for about 40 years, giving out information that I'm going to give out now and more. I'll tell you the name of his book. His book is called The Gathering of the Forces of Light. The Gathering of the Forces of Light, UFOs and Their Spiritual Mission. I'll say that again. Benjamin Krem, C-R-E-M-E, The Gathering of the Forces of Light, UFOs and Their Spiritual Mission. You're going to read stuff in there you've never heard before anywhere. It's really a fabulous book. So I recommend it highly. It's not very expensive. But anyway, that's the primary source for my information. Now, Benjamin Krem, how does he know about the space people? I'll tell you how. He traveled with them. He worked with them for years. And he also worked with a man named George Adamski, one of the early 1950s, in the 50s, one of the first primary contactees who wrote a couple books. One of them is called Flying Saucers Have Landed. And he worked with Adamski and the Space Brothers and Sisters. Now, why do I call them our Space Brothers and Sisters? I'll tell you why. Because aliens was a horrible name made up by the Western governments who wanted us to do two things. They wanted us to not believe they were real, and they wanted us to believe they were evil. Now, aliens is not a name I will use. I call them our space brothers and sisters, or the space people, or extraterrestrials, because they're extra from planet Earth. So they are real. My information is that they are real. Where do they come from? Okay. I hope you're sitting down. They come from our solar system. They don't come from the Pleiades. They don't come from Sirius. Those folks have their own issues. They got their own stuff to deal with. They come from our solar system. Hang on a minute, I'll explain that. Our solar system is a confederation of planets. It's a unit, and it has its own plan and its own evolution. And each member of that solar system, including planet Earth, our planet, is evolving as part of that plan. So Earth has its own plan, and the solar system has its own plan. And by the way, our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, has its own plan too, along with all the solar systems that are in the Milky Way galaxy. Benjamin Krem said that there's nothing in cosmos but humanity. Humanity is everywhere. We're everywhere. Now, we don't all look alike, but we're everywhere. Now, Every planet in our solar system is inhabited with humanity. How can that be? I'll tell you. It's a matter of our science being too ignorant to understand yet. But I will explain it to you and you will see how this could be. Here's the deal. Our planet is just the right distance from the sun that we can be in physical human bodies. We can have water, we can have dirt, we can have trees and plants and animals, all in physical, dense physical bodies, and not melt or freeze to death, because we're just the right distance from the sun. None of the other planets are. They're either too close to the sun and a dense physical body would burn up, or they're too distant from the sun and a dense physical body would, you know, freeze solid. Most of our makeup is water. We would freeze solid. So we're the only planet that has dense physical life. There's humans on the rest of the planets, but they're the next level up of physical matter, which the Ageless Wisdom calls etheric physical. Now, etheric physical is still physical. Let me try to explain it. It's like a gas. We know that oxygen is real. We can measure oxygen, but we can't see it. We can't touch it. But we know it's there. It's real. It's physical. It's a gas. Well, the same thing is true of the etheric physical matter of the human beings that don't live on planet Earth. Their bodies are etheric physical. It's a form of physical. Here's the trick. They have etheric vision and we don't. So we can't see them when they're in etheric physical. They see each other just like you and I see each other, because they have etheric vision. Mars is teeming with life. There's over 8 billion people on Mars, is my information. And that's a small planet. So guess what? The people there are smaller. They're shorter. I don't think there's a person on Mars over 5 feet. Most of them are 4 foot something. But that's etheric physical. Their spacecraft are made of the same thing, etheric physical. And although it's real, we land a camera on Mars. That camera doesn't have etheric vision. It sees nothing but desolation. There's buildings and transportation and people all over Mars. But our camera can't see it because it doesn't have etheric vision. Some people do. Some people have the beginnings of etheric vision. People who see auras. That's the beginning of etheric vision, seeing an aura. Because the normal folks, like I can't see auras. And I don't know if you can or not. If you can, good for you. But there aren't a whole lot of people that have etheric vision. They see the spacecraft up there all the time. They don't want to say that because people think they're crazy, because nobody else can see them. But they're up there in the thousands in the sky every day. All right. Let me give you a couple pictures of etheric physical here. These are photographs that were taken at exactly the right time, two times. There's two different spacecraft here. And if you look very carefully, you can see through parts of the spacecraft. These are two spacecraft that were caught on by photograph just as they were transitioning from solid physical to etheric physical. They were just transitioning from solid physical to etheric physical. They're half and half. And that's why you can see through parts of the aircraft. Beautiful photos, absolutely perfect examples of what etheric physical is like. It's real. And if you have etheric vision, you can see it. And if you don't, you don't see it. So here's what the deal is. We only see them, their spacecraft or their bodies, when they want us to. How do they do it? They lower the vibration of their physical body. They can do that. Their science is so far beyond ours, it isn't even funny. They can lower the vibration of their physical body. They can lower the vibration of their spacecraft to temporarily become solid physical. That's what happened at Roswell. Our information is that this is a Martian spacecraft. It had Martians on board. And that they intentionally lowered the vibration of their bodies in the spacecraft and intentionally crashed and died so that we would know they exist. They were asked to do that. They volunteered to do that. And so that crash was real, and it was real solid physical. There's film, black and white film on YouTube of one of the autopsies that was done on one of these Martians. It's real. Now there's a couple fake ones on there too, but there is a real, they really did an autopsy. They really filmed it. Ultimately what happens though is etheric, the physical that's been turned solid temporarily goes back to etheric. That's why they can't find any parts of the spacecraft now. That's why you can't find the bodies now. They're etheric physical. They're there, but they're not visible to the human eye anymore. That's how beings can live on every planet in our solar system. Etheric physical. We're the only one. The contactees, reliable contactees, have said things about how they comment about planet Earth. And I'll tell you this, it's really cool. They call this the beautiful blue planet because of all the oceans. When you see it from space, it's mostly blue. They call this the beautiful blue planet. And their direct quote from one of these space brothers is, it's the most beautiful planet in our system. They give tours. He said that they actually give tours of people. Now, the spacecraft are from our two neighbors, Mars and Venus, one on each side, which just makes sense. Those are the ones that would travel here the easiest. They're right next door. Most of the spacecraft and crews are Martians or Venusians. They're not Venetians. Those are the blinds. They're Venusians. And so they actually have tours that come. So they can come down close. Now, we don't see them because they're etheric physical. But they come down close to the planet, and people are amazed. They can see the oceans and the water and the trees and the mountains and the plains and the green grass. And they're just the rivers. They're just totally blown away, all the buildings. But they just love to come and do a tour and see the beautiful blue planet, the most beautiful planet in our system.
Here is the second feature. The UFOs responded to me with Elisa Graf.
I kind of thought, you know, they could be UFOs, I guess. And I thought I'd try an experiment. So I had this thought, I'm going to think a thought to them and see what happens. And I usually, as I said, I saw one or two at a time. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, if you can hear my thoughts, I would like to see maybe four of you at once in one part of the sky at some point. So my eye was drawn up, and there were four of these small craft flying very close to one another in a way that jets don't fly.
And that was a foretaste of this episode of the Planetary Makeover Show.
Without further ado, now let me welcome our guest for today, Elisa Graf. She is an American writer, speaker, and English second language teacher living in Germany, and a longtime meditator and student of the Ageless Wisdom teachings. She has been volunteering with Share International for more than 20 years and is a good friend of mine. Now, since childhood, Elisa has had a strong interest in UFOs, and she had her first sighting of a UFO while living in Tokyo in December 1990, when she was in her 20s. Several next experiences occurred all at once of having ships telepathically interact with her in November 2008, when she was on a 10-day silent meditation retreat in rural California. Her letter about that was published in Share International magazine in March 2009, and we will put the link to that letter up for you to read it yourself, and that letter forms the basis of our show today. So another thing you can be following up. Now, Elisa brings her personal experience to the table, knowing what she knows from actual experience of the Space Brothers' humility, their love, their camaraderie. UFOs are not an abstract idea to her, but an experience that has generated a sense of awe, wonder, and love upon contact. So it's my very great pleasure to welcome today Elisa Graf.
Pleasure to be on the show. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've in just reminding of your bio. It reminds me of my first sighting, which occurred with you. So that was a very, very, very special moment. But enough about me. Why don't you recap for us that 10-day, that experience you had during the 10-day silent retreat and what it means for you?
Well, I want to start by saying that actually I was at this silent meditation retreat out in the middle of really very rural California near a near Yosemite, actually. And it was on 100 acres. So we were in a really beautiful place. It was in November of 2008. Of course, I had no idea that I was going to have this kind of experience there. I went there to learn Vipassana meditation. It was a very intensive retreat and it was very scheduled. So there was very minimal time to actually be outside because we were meditating about 10 hours a day. But the first night that I was there, I was just in awe looking up at the stars because there wasn't a lot of light pollution where we were. And so you could really see millions of stars and it was just breathtaking, absolutely magical. And at 9 o'clock after our first meditation on the first evening, I walked outside and it was cold and a lot of people just left and went to their beds because we were all preparing for a 4 a.m. wake up call the next day. But I was so enamored of these amazing stars. And so I stood and was looking at at this beauty. And I realized when I would stop and I would look at a star every now and then, it wasn't a star. It was hovering and then suddenly it would get brighter and other lights would come on. And then it would move slowly across the sky and hang on a ridge on the hills across the valley from where I was. And I saw as many as 6 of those the first night. And I remember thinking, wait, that couldn't be a helicopter because there was no sound. It didn't really look, I mean, it could have been a plane, I thought, but there was really no sound and it was hovering. So that was pretty exciting. I was pretty amazed because I had seen a UFO, I thought, in Tokyo back in 1990 when I was living there. And it was like a triangular craft, but nobody else seemed to be looking at it. It was just me, and I was in a hurry to catch a bus, so I didn't get to spend too much time, but there was some afterglow coming out of it, and it really didn't look at all like a plane. But here I was, looking at this nighttime sky and seeing like many of these kinds of things, these phenomena, and I kept thinking, am I really looking at UFOs? This is amazing. I was very excited.
Yeah, I wondered how did that make you feel?
I was stunned. I was really, it was just contemplating the possibilities. Of course, I couldn't speak to anybody. Nobody else seemed to be looking at them. But, I really had a hard time sleeping because I was just so excited thinking about it. So then the next day, I got up and we had a very intense program, as I said. And about 6 a.m., we would have breakfast. And so I went outside and walked 10 minutes to the center where we had our meals. And I was looking up the blue sky and I noticed some small white, what looked to me like little white jets flying above. And every now and then they'd make a trail, but they didn't seem to be going anywhere. And I thought to myself, that's kind of odd. But I didn't really have a whole lot of time to look at them. I just, noticed them. And I thought my eye was drawn to them. They seemed to also be able to start and stop their trails, or the trails weren't consistent. And so then, I kind of forgot about it and I got back in step with the program. But every time I was outside for short periods, my eye would be drawn up and I would be kind of looking at these what looked to me like small white jets. And they didn't seem to make any sounds and they seemed to just be hanging about. They did not seem to be going in a specific direction to go, they didn't like fly from one end and then you lost sight of them. They were just sort of hanging around. So right. I would see usually right. 1 or 2 at a time. And at some point in the first or second day that I was at the retreat, I had this thought, maybe they're not jets. I'm not sure why, but I just thought, that's kind of curious. And so after a while, I kind of thought, they could be UFOs, I guess. And I thought I'd try an experiment. So I'd have, you know, periods of maybe a half an hour where I was outside taking a walk around a pond. And so I had this thought, I'm going to think a thought to them and see what happens. And I usually, as I said, I saw one or two at a time. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, if you can hear my thoughts, I would like to see maybe four of you at once in one part of the sky at some point. And then I left it alone and I forgot about it. And the next day I was walking again out by the pond. And sure enough, my eye was drawn up and there were four of these small craft flying very close to one another in a way that jets don't fly near each other.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I thought, oh, wow, that's interesting. But of course, my mind was not totally fully accepting of this as a possibility. So I just thought, well, maybe I'm just imagining things.
And did you remember that you had asked for this?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
You know, that's very odd. So then I thought, well, you know, I'd really like to see you closer because I can't really make much out. You're so far away. They were flying very high and they seemed to be going very fast. Mm-hmm. And so, so then, you know, I forgot about it again because we had this intense schedule. So I was back in the meditation hall the next morning at 10:30 in the morning. I suddenly was in meditation. I suddenly had this impulse to go outside. It was a really interesting experience because I was really focused on the meditation. And suddenly I just said, oh, I have to go outside. So we were allowed to, you know, leave the hall as needed. So I got up and I went outside. I was the only person outside. And I was walking across the courtyard at 10:30 in the morning. And then one of these craft flew down fairly low over the trees. And there was no sound at all. And they seemed to have short wings, you know, like a shuttlecraft. And they were like a brilliant white light, white, bright color.
So, Lisa, it was, tell us about the nature of this telepathic contact and telepathy in general from your point of view.
Well, I want to make it clear that I don't consider myself to be telepathic. At least, I think all of us have a latent capacity for it. I mean, I expect that at some point in the future, we will develop it more, accessibly. But, essentially I was at a meditation retreat and it was, a silent meditation retreat, which, for anybody who's done one, it's an incredible experience and, you know, noble silence. And so I was in a very heightened state of awareness. And I really think that that was also another reason why I was more open to having an experience like this. Because I think in our daily lives, we're so sort of in our heads and so connected to the daily intensity of life that we don't really have the sensitivity to these kinds of potential experiences. But, you know, this thing continued. And what happened for me after I first saw them gliding across the treetops, I sent another message and I said, can I see you make a cross, like an even armed Aquarian cross in the sky, you know, make a plus sign for me. And the next day I was walking along the path again and one was flying alongside of the path I was on and it made a line in the sky. And then another one flew across in front of me and made a line over me. So these kinds of experiences continued for the 10 days that I was at this retreat center. And as time went on and I began to realize that this was really happening, I started to really tune in even more. And I really felt a sense of, I guess, camaraderie and a really beautiful sense of a blessing. You know, this is a lot of people who've witnessed UFOs have had this experience. They feel it's like an amazing blessing is coming over them as they watch the Space Brothers. And I think the Space Brothers are very benevolent. And as many books have attested to, the contactees, especially those who are written up on Gerard's website, have explained that that the Space Brothers are more spiritually and morally evolved than we are in many cases, and that they are very expressive of this awareness of their connection to everything and of brotherhood. And I really felt in a way, I felt that it was being expressed in this connection that I had. And it was absolutely beautiful.
That was my experience that first time with you as well. This feeling of brotherhood, of absolute connection.
Kinship, you know.
Yeah, absolute kinship. Yeah, it was really remarkable. So it sounds like for many people that's a constant. At that conference, I remember that Benjamin Krem had a wonderful sentence. He said, and he knows well whereof we speak. By the way, folks, we will also put up a very fascinating interview that was had in 2004, I believe, with Chief Editor Benjamin Krem of Share International Magazine on his experiences with the UFOs. He learned to drive a UFO in his 40s. Before he learned to drive a car. So that's kind of a interesting claim to fame. Anyways, getting back to that conference, he said this wonderful thing, which I'm sure you remember as well. The Space Brothers are gently touching the hem of our garment.
Yes, I do recall that very sentence. Yeah. And I think it was in reference to crop circles that he said that, you know, they've got this very gentle way of approaching us. They don't want to infringe our free will. They don't want to frighten us.
So, Elisa, I'd like us to speak now about the relationship of the UFO activity to the emergence of Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom at this time.
Well, it seems really clear to me that there's a direct correlation. I'm really grateful to have had a foundation myself in understanding the spiritual meaning behind the UFO phenomena through Benjamin Krem's and George Adamski's books, which draw these parallels. And I also want to say that I have great respect for Gerard Artson's books and his work. He's a consummate researcher, and he ties together these things beautifully in his works. And it's so important to have this essential relationship between the increasing visible presence of the Space Brothers on our planet and the externalization of the Masters into our everyday world. Because it's the most tremendous event that's taken place on our planet ever. It's an incredible time that we're living through, and we're all very blessed to be here, I believe.
Yeah. Elisa, while we're talking about books, I would like to mention Mr. Krem's book as well. The Gathering of the Forces of Light, UFOs and Their Spiritual Mission. This is another of a very, very good and informative book. It's not a long read, so it's quite enjoyable to go through. The first half of the book details Mr. Krem's own experiences with the UFO phenomena, and including his work with George Adamski, who was basically the poster child for the UFO phenomena that were so prevalent in the early 50s. He wrote two books that were runaway bestsellers in the United States, which just goes to show the amount of interest in this topic. That's Adamski. Mr. Krem himself has written over 16 books on basically Maitreya, his mission, and all of the all kinds of information connected with the emergence of this great teacher at this time. So the particular book that we're referencing now is The Gathering of the Forces of Light. I wonder if you might, for our listeners, touch upon the phenomenon of the star that they are connected with.
It was around Christmas of 2008, perhaps, that there was a press release put out by Share International about the star that we would be seeing in the near future at that time, an incredible star in the sky that would be bright and be seen both day and night all over the world. And soon after that announcement was made, there were suddenly YouTube reports, you know, and actually news reports from all over the world showing that people were seeing the star. They didn't know what it was, but they were taking footage of it with cameras and also with video cameras. Sometimes you would see a pulsating on these videos on YouTube. You would see this close-up of this distant object, and it looked like it was flickering in different colors and changing size and shape a little bit. But people were really drawn to this in the sky, and they didn't know what they were looking at because they didn't necessarily know about this information. And a lot of that was collected by Share International Magazine. And another video was actually produced showing a lot of these images by various people within the Share International group, showcasing the star. The star is actually four giant spacecraft made by different planets in our neighboring solar, neighboring planets in our solar system. It is meant to be sort of a replica of the Star of Bethlehem, which was actually also not a star, but a UFO. And I've actually had the great blessing of seeing the star, and that was confirmed. And I also, it was also written up in Share International. Many people all over the world have seen the star. And in my case, it really honestly looked like it was close enough to touch. It was so bright, and it was unmistakable. So it's still visible in different places in the world. Actually, people have also filmed it during the day. I recommend that that people listening take the opportunity to look up and spend more time looking at the sky and see if they also have a chance to spot the star.
You know, that seems to be a common thing. All of the sightings that I have had, you know, were in the night skies and where there was little to no light pollution. But with the star is visible in just even against the cityscape of light. Just to fill in a couple of details, and again, people can go to the shareinternational.org, share-international.org website and see many, many different views of the stars. It usually appears low in the sky. It's relatively large compared to most stars. And it's very lively. It sparkles, it twinkles, it changes color, it changes shape. It doesn't really look like a regular star, but you have to be looking at the sky to see it.
Yeah, most people aren't spending much time looking at the sky. I'm sure that was my experience as well. You know that we're all very busy with our lives, and but it's an incredible thing to have these experiences and to be alerted to the fact that there are these higher realities, all these signs are meant to alert us to and give us a sense of hope. And to help us to tune into wonder and become aware of these higher realities and the fact that we're not alone and that we have extraordinary help. And that's, I think that's one of the most important things that I can tell people from my own experience, that there is something going on. And, it's just a question of how much we're actually taking the time to not just contemplate, but tune into it.
Absolutely. And then, of course, there's an opening that occurs there. There's an expansion in the heart area, I would say, when we do see any of these phenomena.
Yes, absolutely.
They're basically another kind of miracle. Would you say, Elisa, that part of the reason you've had these experiences was basically that you were open to them?
I'm sure that's part of it. I think that... as I said, I'm really lucky that I had this time to be at this meditation retreat because, in my daily life, I probably wouldn't have been as tuned in, you know? And I think that was really the message to me that I need to make more space, to tune into this other reality, because we're kind of birthing a new reality on our planet. And I think the closer we can come to recognizing it as truth, as actually a true possibility, the more we can make it manifest. And of course, as I think Gerard said this in his interview last week, that really it's incredibly important that we not only recognize our essential oneness, but that we make it manifest in our actions in the world. Because Maitreya will inspire us, all of humanity, to recognize our essential oneness and to see ourselves as brothers and sisters of one family. We will have an experience of that through his blessing to the world. And this will galvanize us to create a more just and humane world, but we ourselves have to build it. And I think that's one of the values of tuning into this other reality, that there, it's trying to sort of become reality in our manifest daily world.
Mm-hmm. And Benjamin Krem also talks quite a lot about the technology of light that the Space Brothers bring us as a gift.
George Adamski also spoke a little bit about it, I think. Actually, I'm thinking of the book, The Amazing Mr. Lettersworth, which was written as a piece of fiction by Sir Desmond Leslie, who was his co-author on his first book, and apparently was sort of inspired by George Adamski himself. And in that book, it outlines the Space Brothers bringing a technology of tremendous importance, the technology of light. They bring it to all of the nations on Earth at the same time through the aegis of the UN in that story. Benjamin Krem has said that until we renounce war, they can't give us this technology, but it'll be a technology that no one can own and sell, that it'll be available to all of us and will give us free energy that comes from the sun, but not based on the solar energy that we have today.
With this help, some of Maitreya's key priorities in being here now, which are food, shelter, education, and health care for everyone on the planet.
Exactly.
And as we look at our daily reality today, what a golden age that will be.
Yes. And I mean, it's hard to imagine right now companies not selling us power, electricity, you know, having it available to all of us everywhere on the earth. Imagine if that were made manifest, how little social justice issues we would have. I mean, how there wouldn't be inequality in the world because everyone would have access. And so we have this golden civilization ahead of us, as Benjamin Krem has said. But of course, we have to build it. We have to make it happen.
In this particular segment, I want to talk about a couple of other things that people can see every day for themselves besides the star. Let's start with the crop circles, which most people know about, Elisa. What would you like to add about them?
Well, they've been, of course, occurring all over the world. We just had a really amazing one. I live in Germany now, and we had a beautiful one in southern Germany that a lot of German people that I know actually went all the way down to visit. It's pretty far away from here. And people were very inspired. The farmer of that field, I think it was a wheat field, was very accommodating. Mm-hmm. And people spent a lot of time hanging out. It was quite a large, I don't know how big the diameter was, but it was absolutely gorgeous. If you just Google Southern German crop circle, you can probably find it online.
Great.
It was a beautiful design. So the crop circles, according to Benjamin Krem, are not only the calling cards of the Space Brothers, and in many cases in England, because Maitreya is actually living in London, but also that they are occurring in the same place frequently because they're sort of energizing various points of like chakras on our planet. It has also to do with this coming technology of light.
So that will be, again, you know, continuing on the theme of awe and wonder that contact with our Space Brothers evokes. We're just about out of time, Elisa. Is there anything else that you would like to share with or last words you would like to share with our listeners?
I think I would just encourage people to keep an open mind and keep an open heart and recognize that the space people are our brothers and sisters, and that there's remarkable things happening on our planet at this time. And we are all very grateful and lucky to be here so that we can be part of this transformation taking place on our planet. And I thank you for letting me share my message.
That's great last words. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Visit us on Facebook at hashtag Planetary Makeover. This show has been a production of planetarymakeover.org. For more background information, visit www.shareinternational-west.org for related books, DVDs, and CDs by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the world teacher Maitreya, please go to share-ecart.com.